Greetings and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm John Milford, chair of the club's Grown-Ups Forum and your host for today. It's my pleasure to extend a special welcome to any new club members who are here. We know that you'll enjoy your membership and look forward to seeing you often. At this time, please do turn off your cell phones and other devices. Now, here are some of our upcoming Grown-Ups Forum events. On Monday, October 22nd, Esther Koch will return. Esther is a gerontologist and elder care advisor who speaks on what you need to know about Medicare before you're 65. And if it's too late for you and you have friends who are not 65 yet, let them know, because Medicare changes and there are things that are good to know before you get there. Thursday, November 15th, Barbara Rose Brooker will return. Barbara will be sharing excerpts from her book, The Viagra Diaries, as HBO readies the miniseries for TV. Her book has been bought, rights have been bought for HBO, and as I understand, Goldie Hawn has been hired to play the lead. So come get the inside look at that on Thursday, November 15th. And finally, on Monday, November 19th, we'll have the Purpose Prize panel. Jim Emmerman, Chief Operating Officer of Encore.org, will lead a panel of Bay Area Purpose Prize winners. These are people who have been awarded $100,000 prizes for the work they've done after midlife to make a better society. There are three that will be coming here to be in the panel. There are actually 35 in the Bay Area who have received this award. They give five a year. These are just several of our many upcoming programs, and I invite you to check our website for a complete listing of our events. You may register for these programs online at commonwealthclub.org or by calling the club's 24-hour reservation line. Before we proceed, I just want to proudly mention that the San Francisco Village has collaborated in helping to put this program on. It's a nonprofit network of San Franciscans over 60, neighbors realistic about transitions that come with getting older and committed to helping each other when there's a need, people who'd rather stay home than go move someplace. Now it's time for our second opening. Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm John Milford, your chair of the Grown-Ups Forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Kira Reginato. Kira is president of Living Ideas for Elders, an elder care management firm. She's been an elder care manager for 15 years and has served seniors and their families in a variety of settings, including skilled nursing facilities, residential care homes, hospices, Alzheimer's adult day health centers, and the Meals on Wheels program. As host of her radio show called Kira About Aging, she and her guests offer pragmatic advice and create an on-air community where listeners realize they're not alone in facing the often difficult decisions of aging. Kira brings insight, a compassionate personality, and humor to subjects that can be difficult to address. Kira won the Petaluma Chamber of Commerce Recognition Award for Excellence in Service to Seniors in 2010. She served as co-chair of the Western Regional Bay Area Chapter of the National Association of Professional Geriatric Care Managers in 2008 and 9, and chaired the Sonoma County Section on Aging from 2005 through 2008 and is currently a member. She's also a member and past chair of the Petaluma Senior Care Connection and is part of the Speakers Bureau for Successful Aging Sonoma County to prevent misuse of alcohol and medications. Ms. Reginato holds a degree in liberal studies comprised of public administration and gerontology from San Francisco State University. So please join me in welcoming our speaker, Kira Reginata.
Thank you. I have an unusual opening. How many of you know this song? Who are the people in your neighborhood, in your neighborhood, in your neighborhood? Well, the reason I was thinking about that is that I'm in the neighborhood, but nobody knows what an elder care manager is. And chances are pretty good that you're going to actually need one, because every time I go to a party and tell anybody what I do, that it has to do with looking after somebody who is over 65, I am consulting the entire party. So I know that people need the services, but they don't know what they are. You guys have your dentist as part of your professional team and a physician and your financial planner and an attorney. But if it comes to elder care questions, you don't know where to go. So I'm hoping by the end of today that you look at me as somebody in the neighborhood whom you can call. And if I don't have the answer or I'm not local, I will find an elder care manager for you in your area. So what is an elder care manager? That's usually what I get asked. And it's also known as a geriatric care manager. If I don't want to talk to the person at the party, that's what I say they am, that I am, because then they go, well, what? And they just take their drink and they keep walking. But if I use the word elder, they usually stay. Typically, a geriatric care manager is someone who's a gerontologist, as I am, who has studied older adults and worked with them. You'll find a lot of elder care managers are nurses or they're licensed clinical social workers. And in fact, as of today, we don't have a standard in the profession. So there are actually a lot of people that say they're elder care managers and can say because we don't really have like a per se licensing yet, but that may be coming down the pike. So I do two things, as I mentioned. I'm an elder care manager, and I also do the radio show because my passion is to get this information out to as many people as I possibly can. And when I'm doing my private consulting, I'm just helping one family at a time. How I usually work is, or how all of the elder care managers work, is that we have the ability to do a one-time consultation with you. So you can come in, let us know what's going on with you, and we can give you some resources. Oftentimes, I'm helping by doing a family meeting, so maybe I'll meet with the brothers and the sisters first, I'll talk with them about what's going on, and then I'll maybe meet with mom and dad separately, so we have the ability to do that. Typically, I'm called in for a lot of crisis management. My mom is in the hospital, they're telling us she needs to go to a nursing home tomorrow, my mom doesn't want to go to a nursing home, help, what do we do? So I'm often meeting people bedside in sort of crisis situations. I also do what we call ongoing care management, so that I'm meeting a family at one point in time, helping them through something, and they may call me 6 months later, they may call me a year later. I may meet with someone and end up working with them for the rest of their lives, which I really love doing. It just makes when they leave a little difficult part of the job. And the way we start in our profession is we do an assessment. We call it an in-home assessment. That's how we do our magic. We start by seeing the person in their house. We use all of our senses when they're in the house, including our nose in terms of how they're caring for themselves and their pet. And usually we do a written report. We give some resources. We advocate and we monitor. And that's sort of it in a nutshell, but what I thought would be fun to do tonight is to actually tell you stories about how I do all of what I do all day and how other elder care managers do. So, a lot of the children that I meet are nervous about approaching mom and dad. They are the head of the family. And I don't care if you're a neurosurgeon or you're the head of the Commonwealth Club, you are still their kid, and you ain't going to tell them what to do. Enter geriatric care manager, professional, trained, know how to get in there and start working with people. I have much more purchase. So that's part of my secret to success is that I'm not family. And I'm also not afraid to have those hard conversations. A lot of people say dad shouldn't be driving. You tell him. I will have that hard conversation. I'm okay with that. My dad is here today, and I'm proud to say I have not had to have that conversation with him yet. But I'll tell you, I always ask my clients, regardless of age, regardless of their mental status in terms of dementia, because I do deal with a lot of people in their very late 80s and their early 90s, a lot of people who have memory loss, what are your goals? How do you want to age? And I just interviewed a woman who was listed as having severe dementia. You tell me if this sounds like severe dementia to you. She's 92. She had to move into an assisted living facility, and she wanted to go back to her house. And she was sort of trying to figure out with her family is that if that was going to be doable, and I was called in to consult. And her quote is, I said, "What's your goal?" And she said, "To make a difference in this world before I leave." Doesn't get any more profound than that, right? Just because she's 92, I'm not writing her off. She still has goals. She's able to articulate them. So I always ask people, you know, how do you want to age? What do you want? How can I make that happen? This isn't an us and them. This is a team approach. And a lot of times the adult children are trying to sway me. This is what I think should happen for mom or mom and dad. And they push and they push and they push and they push on their agenda. And they're actually footing the bill a lot of times for my services, but that's just tough darts because the person I'm really listening to, unless there's a move for conservatorship or the person is very, very mentally ill, is what does the senior want to do? And how do I work with them? And then how do I marry both of those and have the whole family sort of be healthier? So identities are changed here. These are sort of vignettes and stories that I think will be helpful. I call it the M's, and you saw that on the advertisement for the show. I look when I go in to assess about whether or not somebody should move or stay put. Usually that's my number one call, is people call me saying, "I don't think my mom is safe to stay anymore by herself. I have some concerns. We think she should move now." That's not always the answer, but I'm called in to look at that. Look at memory. I look at someone's mobility, and that's not necessarily their ability to drive or take public transportation, but it also may mean how they're ambulating in their house. We have what we call furniture walkers. So the person has a lot of pain, and they're waiting to get to something that they can hold on to and then to the next surface that they can walk to. So we look at improving that sort of mobility even in the house as well. I'm assessing medications, the importance of people knowing what they're taking. Older bodies do not metabolize medication the same as somebody my age. Their kidneys aren't excreting it. Their liver's not processing it. They've got other medications on board, so there's med-med interactions. And they may not be taking the meds the way they were designed to be taken. I did have a client the other day who said, "I'm not supposed to eat grapefruit with this." I read that little drug scare sheet. I said, "My God, you're absolutely right. This is one of them that doesn't have grapefruit." Now, this man could not remember when to take his meds, but he knew not to have grapefruit juice with them. So I look at their medical condition. A lot of people don't need me in their 70s because they're doing really very well and even into their early 80s. But as different medical conditions come up that start to add together, we get condition after condition after condition, that's when they're probably needing more support. And I'm called in at that juncture to start to do an assessment. I also look at meals, and that might mean not only what they're eating, but what they're hydrating themselves with. I have a lot of adults that use alcohol and don't drink a lot of water. I have a lot of people who do a very minimal amount of eating and then take a lot of medication. So I'm looking at how they're preparing meals, what they're eating, what they're drinking. I look at their teeth and their dentition, how, you know, what kind of dental care have they been getting. And a lot of my families will say, "Well, you know, they're 85, we don't want to spend any more money on dental care." You know, so it's my job to sort of bring my arms around all of that when I'm doing my assessment to get a full picture. I'm looking at mood, another M. A lot of my clients are depressed. A lot of the men get depressed after retirement, and I'm meeting them 10 or 15, 20 years down the road. They have not found anything else to do with their time. Their spouses, their significant others are pretty down, discouraged. "Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Why don't you do that?" Well, that person might actually be clinically depressed by the time I'm assessing them. I also see a lot of anxiety with my clients. I have a lot of people that have had a history of mental health illnesses that I'm looking after. So we'll talk about that, M. And then money. How is somebody handling money? I'm going to have a wonderful woman on my radio show who's an attorney, and she talked about the gray zone of when your parents aren't quite writing their checks correctly, they're paying things late, they're paying things three times. They don't have any sort of dementia diagnosis, but we're starting to think that that financial cloudiness is actually one of the precursors of some mild cognitive impairment and one of those red flags that we really should be paying more attention to. And then lastly is legal. Legal doesn't start with an M, so I had to make it legal, Dad. Yeah. I couldn't think of an M for legal. But basically, that is getting your paperwork in order. What do you want for someone if they can't handle your finance, if you can't handle your finances, who's going to do so in your stead? My daughter, who's here today, is actually my power of attorney. If I were hit by a bus by Muni, which you know is very likely in this neighborhood, my daughter legally could sign on my business account, and she legally could sign on my personal account. There's not much money in there, but probably, you know, for 2 or 3 months, we would be okay. And then an advanced health care directive. I work for hospice. I don't know what's going to happen to me, but if it gets to a point, I already have my wishes written down. I have a hospice nurse who's my agent, and I have a backup who's my mom who said, I hope I never have to be your agent. I don't want to have to make those decisions. But we're talking about legal, getting your affairs in order in terms of your final paperwork for the future. And then, of course, a will or a trust. So that's the M for legal. They can't see me wink on radio, can they? So I want to talk to you about a lady I had. This is the moving. The family brought me in. She had severe dementia. And her family was concerned after the husband passed away that they were going to have to move her to be cared for. They had, they had tried some in-home care because the husband, when he was alive, had been the primary caregiver. And then he thought, I could use a little bit of help here. Well, she hid from the caregiver. When the caregiver came, she literally hid. So the family said, after Dad died, we're really worried. We don't think that we can bring somebody in here. Mom didn't do well with a two-hour person. Now she needs 24-hour care because of her Alzheimer's disease. And I said, let me meet her and see what I think. So I went and I met her. She was very, very happy at her home. She really knew the layout well. It was clear that she didn't want to leave. I introduced myself as a friend of the daughter. I didn't have a name badge. I didn't have a pen. I didn't have a paper because oftentimes just a cup of tea or coffee, and I bring sweets. It'll be different for this generation. I'll have to bring bagels, I think. But so I bring usually something very sweet, some coffee, cake, and I get my little, oh, you seem nice, dear. Sit down, and I can gather all my information without them even knowing who I am. I prefer to have full disclosure, but in this case with this woman, it wouldn't have gone well, so I had to just come as a friend and gather data. We decided to hire some caregivers for her, and it actually went well. And I think it's because she kind of knew that her husband died, and they could hang it on, since he's died and you don't want to move, we're going to have these women live there. She had had boarders as a kid in the house, so we called them boarders. We used her language that was in her long-term memory, and she didn't like them, but I had helped the family vet caregivers who were very good at keeping a low profile. So when she would start to escalate and get excited about who this was, we had hidden a key outside in the event she said, because I have people fire my people all the time, get out. Get away from me, get out, I don't want to be with you. The woman had a key outside that she could let herself back in when the person calmed down. She would also go and read a book in the living room and keep a real low physical profile. So she was able to help with medication, able to help with food and bathing, but it took a very long time for that caregiver to develop rapport. But I sat with the family and we vetted those caregivers together to find just the right person. I put a communication binder in the home because they were private caregivers, not through an agency, and had communication. They wrote about what happened every single day, and I could come and read and give techniques and ideas. I came to find out that these two wonderful caregivers who had been with her for 2 years were sleeping on the floor. These were women who were in their late 40s, as I am. And I thought, Holy Mother of God, how are you guys sleeping on the floor? I have the baby room monitor between you. And they said, well, she gets up at night several times to use the bathroom. And sometimes she's only wrestling in her bed, but we don't know, because we hear it on the baby monitor. So we get up, we pad down here, and we see, oh, no, she's okay, and we go back to bed. So the technology that I got was what we call a pressure mat. I got a little mat. We told her it was a new rug. When that woman stepped out of bed and not just wrestling in her covers, an alarm chimed in the caregiver's room, and then they got their butts up and came down and got her and took her to the bathroom. And they thought I was a genius. $295, $295, it wasn't cheaper, $195 changed the caregiver's lives. But I had no idea they were sleeping on the floor. But by monitoring, I found this out. But they were getting up several times a day. And they actually stayed with her until she passed away. I certainly help a lot of people move. I don't mean to say that I don't, but in this case, most of my seniors tell me they'd like to stay put. So that's what I try to orchestrate. Tell you a story about a man who had memory loss. He had had a stroke. He was discharged from the hospital into a skilled nursing facility, like a nursing home, with a memory unit. Because of the stroke, they thought he had some memory problems. But the memory unit has a punch code to get out of it. And so he would pace back and forth during the day, and his brother came to visit from out of the state, and he said, you know, I don't know much about this. Maybe this is a fine place for my brother, but could you go see? Because I just don't know if he needs to be there. I can't visit him very often because I'm out of state, but maybe he could come and live with us or come near us. So I went, and I spent time with this gentleman and found out that his stroke had left him sort of in a developmental disability kind of place. He was sweet. He was easily bored, easily distractible, but very, like, he wasn't going to elope from this facility. And he didn't, you know, he was capable of getting dressed with reminders and that sort of thing. And this, I talked with the staff, I read through the medical chart, and I did determine that he really was over-institutionalized. I worked with an agency out of state. The brother went and checked out the homes and came down, got him some anti-anxiety medication for the plane, not the brother, but the person who was in the nursing facility. And he took his brother home, and he called me, and he said, all my kids see him, I see him, my wife sees him, we're two blocks away, we see him all the time, this has been great for us. Totally changed the quality of life for this particular gentleman. Mobility. Number one thing people talk to me about is driver's license. Nobody wants to lose their driver's license, and you can go to any number of seminars on that. So I'm going to give you a little bit of fun information, and actually Robin is here, who gave a wonderful lecture on it, and I'm taking some of what she shared with me and using it for this particular client that I'm going to tell you about. A client was really worried about renewing his license, which is not uncommon, and so what I did is I got a certified driving rehab specialist, there are not many of them, but there are some, to come and do a clinical evaluation, which is part one, and then a road test with him. And usually what they do, they do not share their report with the DMV. This is really something that they do for the person who's asking for it and paying for it. And they say, show me where you drive. Show me how you do. And actually, this guy will tell you that he has clients that only make right turns all around the city. Right? To be safe. And that's a coping mechanism, right? A lot of people don't drive at night. My night vision has definitely changed. People don't drive in inclement weather. So there's a lot of good reasons to start to change how you drive. This particular guy was worried he wouldn't pass, so we had the certified driving rehab instructor come with him. And he actually was able to do some retraining with him. He had him look over his shoulder. He had him remember to use his blinker. And this particular gentleman was good on the uptake and able to retrain. But we realized that he really probably wasn't going to be safe on the freeways. So what we did is we asked the DMV to come and find out if he could benefit from a restricted license. And a lot of people don't know what that is. And that is, you get in the car and you show DMV where you go on your route. I go here to get my hair done. I go over here to get my meds. I go to Safeway to grocery shop. I visit my daughter over here. Whatever your little thing is, if you can prove that you can do that safely, the DMV will issue you a restricted license saying, if this is the only place you go, fine. We see you out on 101, you're in trouble. So he was able to drive exactly where he wanted to drive. He wasn't going to go on the freeway. He was perfectly happy to just go in his restricted area, but most people don't even know to ask for that, especially if they're, I have another client who just got a hearing notice. The doctor turned in a note for her license to be suspended, and she's going to fight that. And part of what we'll do is get a certified driving rehab specialist to go out and see her. Meds. So here's the stat. Almost 2 million hospital stays happen for people 65 and over due to adverse reactions. Two-thirds from accidental overdose, or the amount prescribed has a more powerful effect than intended. I don't know if you know, but when drugs are going through the FDA process, from what I understand, is they're tested on the 12 and under crowd for like the kids' dose, and then they're tested on my age, right, 12 to whatever, 40 or 50. Apparently no testing is done on the delicate bodies of older adults. You don't need to do that. So the same amount of Lipitor I'm going to get is what they're going to give to, you know, perhaps a 90-year-old. There's not a dosage schedule for the pharmacists or the physicians to use. So we have a lot of hospitalizations, a lot from blood thinners, and I happen to have a couple that I went to see, and their medication was everywhere. As care managers, we're actually taught, once we say, can you show me your meds, they say, oh, yes, because, again, we're in the house. They'll say, here are my meds, and they'll show me their kitchen counter. And then when we say, well, are there any others? Oh, yeah. And then you go over here, and you go back to the bathroom, and you show me there. Are there any others you take? Well, yep. And then they go over and they pull out the bedroom drawers. Well, this couple was that. They had them in kitchen drawers. They had them in the bathroom. There were two of them. And unfortunately, the husband had Alzheimer's disease, and she didn't want to step on his toes or hurt his feelings, so he got to self-administer. So he needed to have an operation, and they asked him to stop taking his blood thinner 10 days before. He was still driving. And I wasn't part of the picture at this point. And they got him on the gurney, got the IV started, and then somebody just said, so you stopped taking your blood thinner 10 days ago, as we asked, right? Because they didn't want him to bleed during the surgery. They call it bleeding out, I guess. And he's like, oh, no, I've been taking that, just like you told me, every day, just like with my other one. They had, that's it. Put your street clothes on. You're out of here. Totally canceled the surgery. So I was called in. And because I'm a professional, I was able to begin to work with him in a way that his wife couldn't, and I put the medications in a MediSet. This is like my favorite thing, you guys. This is mine. I'm like Carol Merrill. Because I only take one med a day, so this is what I can handle one day. If you're on two a day, morning and night, we got the two a day. Now, you're going to laugh. You see these at Walmart, you laugh. I don't know if I took my med this morning, but if I look in there on Monday and it's empty, I go, I did. Great. So this is the two. Now, this gentleman happened to be on more than that, and so I had the deluxe model of. So this is morning, noon, evening, and bedtime, because a lot of the meds are prescribed at the hour of sleep, your hypnotics, the things that are going to make you fall, things that are going to, you know, affect you, go in there. So I came onto the scene, was able to set up his meds, was able to visit regularly, got the blood thinner medication out of there for 10 days, got him to his appointment, and they said this was a game changer for us. He safely got to his appointments. He was taking his meds correctly. And the lady, the wife, said to me when I first came, I don't need you. I don't know what you do. Basically, I don't like you, don't let the door, you know. And I came back. And that lady ended up calling me every single day after we had been working together as she was declining. And she'd call me kiddo, always called me kiddo. How you doing, kiddo? I'm like, good, good. Anyway, I was there when she passed away. So I was able to be with her for a couple of years, and her husband predeceased her, and then she passed away. But we did it without ER visits due to medication errors. Surgeries went smoothly, etc. But medication is a big one. And actually, nowadays, we have the automated dispenser ones. I don't know if you've seen those. You fill up these little cups, and I don't know how they do this, but it just swirls down, bing, and a little chime says, time to take your medication. And there's a light, too. So if you have a visual or a hearing deficit, you can see the light. Well, I'm almost ready for that. If this isn't working, I'm all about that because you can fill like a whole month's worth in there. And this other client I just got, he takes meds just once at night. So I was able to get him one that's longer, that's day 1 through 15. And then on the other side, it's 16 through 31. So I only have to visit him once to put all that medication in for the month. As long as he knows what day it is, we're good. Which might not be effective. But I'm going to see. I'm going to try that first because it's cheaper. Medical condition. I was working with a man. He was divorced. He had no children, and the family was not nearby, and he was actually dying. He didn't really think he was dying. He was on oxygen full-time, and he would smoke. So as I got to know him, I said, will you do me a favor? Will you turn off the concentrator before you light the match? He says, for you, okay. So we did not blow up his house nor the neighborhood, I'm happy to say. It's not like PG&E thanked me privately. It's not that. I'm just saying it was a little frightening every time I went. The family said, we're not local. Can you please go and visit him on a regular basis as he's declining? And can you please get him onto disability? So I did that legwork and that research to get him onto disability. I also brought in hospice because even though he didn't think he was dying, I knew from talking with the medical practitioners and from the repeated hospitalizations that his condition was getting a lot worse. And I was able to work with him really closely to get in those caregivers who ended up living with him. He was taking morphine for pain at the end and had some confusion and some hallucinations. And I'll never forget, I went over one time and he said, you see her? I said, yes. He said, they're switching out caregivers. He said, the lady I normally have here left and she made that woman come. Well, it was the exact same woman who's always been there. So here I am sitting on the couch, torn between what we call reality orientation of, no, that is Stella still, versus, yeah, I don't know, we're going to have to see about that. They shouldn't be doing that. We should always have consistent caregivers, you know. And this particular gentleman I had enough a rapport with, and I could see he was really troubled by the fact that they were switching out caregivers on him. But I put my arm and I said, you know, Mr. So-and-so, I said, that is the same caregiver. I said, you're on medication that's changed how you're perceiving things. He goes, yeah, I'm on a lot of morphine. I said, you really are at this point, and I don't want you to worry. I said, that is the exact same caregiver. And he said, she is? I said, yeah. So he said, man, like he shook his head, like I'm losing it. And it was really painful. There's a lot of really tender moments in care management because you're working so personally with one person, one-on-one. And I always tell people when they call me to do an intake, which we all do for free, you call us, tell us what's going on, and we'll figure out if we can help you. I'll always say, listen, I'm not the only caregiver on the block, not in the county. You know, if you feel like this isn't quite the connection on the phone that you're looking for, please let me give you the name of colleagues. You know, it will not hurt my feelings. Maybe you want a man. Maybe you want somebody with an RN background. Maybe I have a woman who's very cold and more clinical. And sometimes that's just right for people in terms of boundaries and setting limits. I tend to hug my clients. I tend to joke a lot. I tend to be pretty direct and pretty honest with them as well. So you have to figure out when you're hiring somebody who's going to be the right fit for you or for your mom or for your dad or aunt or grandma and stuff like that. We did get the benefits awarded a month before he died. So the family was thrilled that he got something, but we had no idea he was going to go that quickly. So that's the denouement of that story. Meals, nutrition. A lot of people that have memory loss are not throwing out stuff from their refrigerator, and we call it science experiments in our business. I also have a lot of hoarders that I go to see. And so I say, this is what you do as part of your assessment. You're like, oh, you know, do you think I could have a cup of tea? Well, they'll say, sure. They'll put the pot on. They'll come back to me. There's never a cup that's taken out of the cabinet. There's no tea bag. There's no cream, no sugar. I'm already doing my memory testing with just asking for a cup of tea, but in a really gentle way. I'll say, oh, I'll get the cream, and I'll go and I'll get the refrigerator. You know, I'll open the refrigerator, and I'll see that it's just piled deep with furry things. I know that person's not eating well and taking care of themselves. Any of that would have given them food poisoning. But if I say, gee, you know, what are you eating for dinner tonight? Maybe they're going to tell me they're going to go shopping. Maybe they're going to say I don't have much. You know, I have to see what their perception is of how they're living with that refrigerator. In this particular woman's case, a lot of people tell me they don't want Meals on Wheels. Even if they haven't had them, they'll say they don't want Meals on Wheels. So this lady had a lot of money. She was a millionaire. She was a gourmet cook. She went to Whole Foods every single day. If ever there was an earthquake, I am going to Mrs. So-and-so's house, because she had a pantry that would have fed the entire neighborhood a good month. I got, you know, like orange juice and some cheese in my house. You know, you don't want to come to my house in an earthquake. So she was on oxygen. She had had lung surgery for cancer, and she was having trouble standing at the kitchen cooking the meals that she used to. This is a lady who would blanch her asparagus at 85 and then put it in the ice bath and take it out. I mean, this is somebody who loved to cook. So I said, why don't we get you someone who's a gourmet cook to cook for you? Like a delivery service that they're doing for a lot of busy professionals. So we tried two of those, and they all were crap. They all tasted the same. Don't bother her. Absolutely not. Okay. How about I get a personal chef in here and cook? All right. She would see to that. So this woman came. She was a professional personal chef. She put up all the meals. And she's got to come too far. I don't like having to save all the containers. No. And this is... So we looked at medical cannabis, because she actually had a decreased appetite too. So that was some of the medication I think might have been changing how things tasted. So she tried smoking it. She tried ghee, which is the butter with it in it. And then she tried suckers, and then she tried brownies. You know what she told me? I said, how's that working? Is it stimulating your appetite, Mrs. So-and-so? You know what she said? There's only so many brownies a woman can eat. So ultimately, we were able to get a woman who came after her shift at Whole Foods every single day to come in and cook. And that woman did it right. And you know why? Because she was lonely. The ultimate goal was companionship, but I never would have been able to tell my client that. And she wasn't going to be able to articulate to me. It was always about the food and about things not tasting right and her inability to stand there and do it. So she was really happy once we had someone in there every day. My last story is money. I had a woman who also never married, didn't have any kids, and had what we call diminished executive functioning. Her judgment was really poor, this part of the brain right here. Okay. Anyway, she could get up and she could bathe herself, she could dress herself, she could take care of herself, but her decisions around money were terrible. So much so, when her plumbing went out, she didn't get her plumbing fixed. When her heat went out, she didn't get her heating fixed. When the holes in the roof started to have plants coming through, she didn't get the roof fixed. Now, we had hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank, but we didn't have the connection there with how to take care of the money. So this person bought undergarments that were disposable to wear instead of fixing the plumbing. It was really hard for her to take them out of the home, so they just piled up in the house. So some issues here. This person needed surgery, and that's how they actually liked a lot of supplements and vitamins that they would buy that they heard on the radio and the TV. Took so many of one, got dehydrated so badly in their bed that they thought they were dying. After 3 days, the EMTs found the person covered in fecal matter and totally dehydrated. And the only reason she called for 911 was because she thought she was dying and it was the end of her life. So she entered the medical system. She had had a bad experience with hospitals as a kid. So that's how she got to be 80 and never any medical care. Anyway, she ended up needing surgery. So I was in the hospital with her when she got her surgery, then back to the skilled nursing facility, then back for more surgery, then back to the skilled nursing. And I got her a professional fiduciary, who is somebody who's licensed in the state of California to pay your bills and manage your money. So we sort of safeguarded her in that area, and we got her into a care home. She's happy as a clam. That professional investor sits side by side with her, writes the checks with her, sold her house, sold the car, and she's just a lot happier now. Whenever I see her, she's just, I think she just feels more secure now. So that's the story of that with money. And I just wanted to let you know that part of what a care manager does is that we dedicate ourselves to the minutiae of day-to-day life. So whereas the adult kids aren't going to make the follow-up phone call to the long-term care insurance company, they're going to miss the call from the social worker from the hospital, they're going to forget to follow up with their mom or dad about something, that's all I do all day, is I make sure all those little pieces are handled, which is why you keep like what we call a small caseload, because you can't have 42 people that you're ministering to in that way. So a typical caseload for me might be 8 individuals. But if people are on hospice and they're in the process of dying, I may need to drop what I'm doing and make sure that I'm right there at their bedside. So I can't have 6 of those people. There's only one me. So when you're choosing a care manager, you want to ask, you know, how many clients do you have and what is the acuity? How sick are these people? How are you managing your balance? So, I mean, that's pretty much what we do in a nutshell. And I'm hoping, as I say, that by the end of this, that you feel comfortable calling an elder care manager for help. There's a radio flyer outside. If you'd like to listen to the radio show or any podcasts, you can leave your card if you'd like to be added to the list. It's been a real pleasure to be here tonight. Thank you so much.
We'd like to remind our listening audience this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Kira Reginato, care manager. I think we have questions here in the room. So, Kira, would you take questions?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Thank you, Candice.
How would we cover your services?
Yes, they're all privately paid. Care managers on average in a big city like this range from about $100 to $150 an hour. And Medicare doesn't recognize it. Long-term care insurance policies sometimes come with an elder care manager as part of their services, but I only see them sort of come in to verify coverage. I don't really see them holding your hand over time the way most of my families are using me.
Thank you very much. What other red flags of kids who are remote from their parents do you know? My dad just sent all three of us some financial information, and we all got somebody else's package. Now, it might have just been a mistake, but so we were just, I just wanted to know what other flags you might know.
I did address a card to the wrong guy one time, so I don't want to say it's straight up dementia because it can happen. It's like, I got your package. My name isn't Craig. I was like, wow, sorry about that. To tell you the truth, I think nothing is better than a visit. And I certainly would check with my dad and say, hey, Dad, I got Beatrice's packet. And if he goes, oh, my gosh, versus you did, you'll hear sort of the nuances if there's any covering or if there's just not an acknowledgement. It's great that he's sending you this to begin to bring you into the loop. And as a family, I would say you want to do a family meeting. If you're not able to have a care manager, like, work with you, I would have them go and visit Dad and then report out if your dad will give written permission for that. And usually what I say is, hey, Dad, we found this wonderful expert who's local. I mean, I've just referred to a friend, to someone in Florida. You know, I'm not going to be there. We want to make sure as you get older that we've done everything that we can to help you make that as independent as possible. Is it okay if we pay to have somebody come or treat you as a Christmas gift or whatever, to have somebody come and sit at the kitchen table and make sure we're heading in the right direction? Because that beginning signs of the dementia that may or may not relate to need to be followed up on, especially if he's living by himself. So it could be innocuous, it could not, but I have a lot of people tell their kids that they're fine on the phone and they come home to visit for the holidays. Not pretty. Yeah. They're like, Mom, you said, or they'll start talking among themselves. The house is a mess. The person's got stained clothing. The garbage hasn't been taken out. The house doesn't look kept up as it used to have been. Again, the refrigerator might be a science experiment. Those are all the things that you need to physically be there to really see how they're doing. That they're going to relate to you that things are fine and they may not be.
Have you ever worked with an elderly person where the family has not contacted you because there is no family? They're absolutely alone and they've contacted you themselves.
Yes, I have. And that is actually the case of the woman who was the person that I found all the meals for. I mean, that's just off the top of my head. But yes, mm-hmm. Of course, people call me on their own behalf and don't have family.
Yeah, so you sort of have to do all the things that you normally do, plus whatever the family would normally do.
But also we have families that don't work very well that don't want to do anything anyway.
Oh, same thing.
or worse than that, you know, financial abuse is the number one growing crime right now in the U.S., and a lot of those adult kids think they're entitled to mom or dad's money, or they're doing meth or drugs. So I'm having not only family involvement, but negative family involvement.
I'm better off than these people with a certain kind of family. I should appreciate it. Okay, thank you.
Good reframe. I like that. Yes, sir. You might be.
I should have two short questions. One is, if you have long-term care insurance and there's some coordination of care, how do you read that policy to determine what exactly you're entitled to? That's number one. And the second one is, if you have an aging relative out of state who you have no legal authority over, do you have some suggestions about how to get services for them mm-hmm. when they're not giving you any permission to do it, mm-hmm. but you think they might need help?
Those are two really good questions. So the first one with long-term care insurance, I look through those, I read it myself. Typically, a long-term care policy will either cover you for home care or institutional care or both. So in the case of this one woman, she bought it at the time and only got nursing home coverage, $50 a day.
I'm asking about the coordination of care.
Typically. Typically, they come out to make sure that you meet the criteria for that policy, i.e. you are lacking in two activities of daily living for the benefits to kick in, and then they go like this. That's been my experience, and then they're really slow to pay you. Yeah.
Screening of workers, that kind of thing.
Fabulous. I mean, if that's true, that would be, I would probably call the insurance company, not just the person who sold it to you, maybe to double check that you have that peace of mind. I have not seen really good care coordination ever in all my long-term care, unfortunately. Although I have to say, I'm dealing with people in their late 80s and early 90s, so they've had the policies since way back when the, you know, the daily coverage was $75.
So these were federal government employees, you know, the policy that we can.
Good.
About, you know, 15 years ago, supposedly bells and whistles.
There's so many nuances, I would say, to call that company. And the other, in terms of mom or dad, you know, you bring up a really good point, is what is my permission level?
As an aunt.
An aunt.
None of us have any authority over her, but she's not in, so what can you do?
You can call to report a concern if you really think there is self-neglect, to usually a local agency that you can get from calling Elder Care Locator, which will give you an area agency on aging. Petaluma has the Petaluma People's Services Center.
When I called that agency, they said they couldn't do anything unless...
She said it was okay for you to go.
Different
no, because usually... if someone is not asking for the help, they're not going to send somebody out unless they're a danger to themselves or others or their self-neglect. So, like, if my daughter called and said, go see my mom, hopefully they wouldn't honor that because there ain't nothing wrong with me. But if I think there's nothing wrong with me, but there is, and the neighbors are telling you, then Adult Protective Services can make that friendly call and say, hi, we're just checking on you, and you can report anonymously. But again, I like what I told this gentleman. Auntie, we love you. We're so far away. You're 93. We don't even know if you have a trust. Do you mind talking with one of us about it? Maybe she'll like one of the three of you to start letting you in just this much. But, you know, and always say you're concerned about the future, not that she should have done it 20 years ago, because that people get really upset if they think there's like pressure in the moment. Say, we're trying to plan for the future. You're only 93, but we need to start thinking about the future. Would you talk with one of us? And again, as a care manager, if they'd let you pay for that for a Christmas gift, I would get in there and I call it oiling my way around the dance floor. And I do get permission, though, before I talk to the kids. Written. If you don't want the son or daughter to know about this or the nieces, it can just be between us. But most of the time when it's done with the right feeling, there's a lot of buy-in. Marcy, hi.
Hi, Kira. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
I have two questions.
Sure.
Oh, my first question is, in the case of the medication scenario that you gave where the gentleman was on the gurney and had to go home and didn't get a surgery, but his wife was so resistant to you in the beginning, who hires you in that case? I mean, who pays you? How does that happen?
She paid me. The family did not pay me. A home care agency is the one who called me. And she, I think, was under the impression I was kind of working with them to do more than what they could do. I think they said she's sort of the big picture person. Maybe you should meet with her. But I will never forget her body language and her easy dismissal right from the get-go. And she probably became a client that trusted me more than all of them. But initially I got the pause. I call it the pause at the vet, you know, just sort of.
My second question is, do you facilitate end-of-life questions, conversations with families? Is that something that you get asked to do?
It isn't something I get asked to do, but I'm often the pivotal person who can start to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. So that if Mrs. Jones knows me, or in this case, this gentleman who didn't really know he was dying, and I was able to discuss with him, since I've worked at hospice, what hospice can do. The family said, how much time do you think we have? And I'm like, nobody will ever answer that question, but I will tell you, you know, the doctor is surprised if he would be here for the following holiday set. And they started to sort of shift how they worked with him to step up how often they visited and help with the financial paperwork. I'm really comfortable talking about death. My daughter will tell you that it's like, Mom, you can't just say stuff like that, you know? You're just like, no big deal to you, but it is a big deal. And I'm like, it is? Sorry, you know, okay, you know, I forget your friends are, you know, not 90. And if they're 90, they're even more afraid to talk about it because the mortality is even closer. But I have no trouble being, especially in that hospital room, having a conversation that the doctor who has no rapport with the family yet or the nurses to say, I want to bring in the palliative care team. This is what you can expect. And because I'm the known entity, I can share that with them first in a gentle way for them, the real team, to sort of take it from there.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Talking here about assisted living, have you ever been asked about assisted death?
I know that in
Washington, possibly Oregon, you can legally have assisted death.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that in California. Is there a way to get around that?
Well, then go ahead, because
an organization called Compassion and Caring, and they have chapters around the United States, and there are laws in California.
That allow, it's a new law that allows physicians to, or it prohibits physicians from not providing palliative care when you're dying so that you don't have to have a painful death. And there are ways to get information about how you can end your life graciously at home without somebody else assisting you, and that's legal. So end-of-life choices, if you go on the Internet, Compassion and Choices, the old Hemlock Society was a precursor organization.
That's right.
But there are things, and they have counselors that can help you.
And I think we're going to see this more and more and more. I mean, the majority of Medicare dollars are spent on those last 2 years of life on stuff people don't even want done to them anyway. So we're going to be seeing this issue more and more and more.
Kira, thank you very much for your program.
You're welcome.
When are you on the radio station, please?
I am on Saturdays live from 2 to 3 p.m. And in San Francisco, the signal doesn't travel, so you'd have to get it online at ksro.com. And the flyer is outside with, we do a topic every month. This month is sex. So we have a guest every single week talking about a different thing about older adults and intimacy and sex. Every month it changes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Kira, that was spectacular.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you very much.
We thank our audience here as well as those listening to the recording and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California commemorating its 109th year of enlightened discussion is adjourned.